9/11 Dreads, episode 22 this week. We're talking a little bit of Uncle Charlie Manson. And of course, as always,
this week's SMF.
That's right, 9/11 Dreads starts now.
Okay, let's do this fucking shit.
Once again, coming straight from the insane asylum, it is 9/11 Dreads. I am Otis B. Dreads.
I am Malice Murphy.
And you sound a little raspy over there, my friend. Sounded a little raspy.
Just a little bit, maybe.
A little bit. And 9/11 Dreads podcast. We got a good one tonight. I'm really excited for this one because we got a really good SMF this week. Maybe not one that, you know, you may think. hopefully we're kind of throwing a curveball at you this week on this week's SMF. Before we get started, we got to throw out some love, man. Gorehounds of Horror over there on Facebook. They got a public group, public Facebook group, and then they got a closed group. And, hey, it's really simple, people. It really is. And I know we probably got a lot of hounds listening to us tonight, but just in case there are some that are not familiar with Gorehounds of Horror, you go to this closed group, you answer three simple questions. They're pretty easy. What's your favorite, you know, movie, horror movie icon? These things like that. You know, and you know, you agree not to spam. Will you be active? Will you like stuff? Will you at least, you know, I mean, a comment or post or whatever? Just be as active as you possibly can. And it's really that simple. And trust me, you're not going to regret it once you get in, because they are a great bunch of horror fanatics over there, Malice and myself. I'm over there probably a little more than you. I don't know.
I would say a lot more than me.
Yeah, probably. Because, you know, I have no life. other than work and coming home, I'm right there on Gorehounds. But anyway, and then there's also a another where we're kind of doing a share for share with Gorehounds and the other horror group that I recently became a member of. And haven't had a whole lot of time to peruse the group a whole lot, but that is what it is. After Dark, throw that in your search engine and see what you get there on Facebook.
I'm a member over there as well.
Are you? Yes. You did. You are a member now.
Yes.
Awesome. Awesome. So, hey, Malice and Otis here, yeah, we're both members over there. So go over there and check them out. We do a share for share. I believe the date that was set up was Sunday. I'm not sure.
They got a lot of good content.
Do they?
They do a lot of watch parties.
I have noticed that, and I really don't have a whole lot of time to, you know, sit down and do that. If I have a watch party, it's normally me and you and, you know, maybe a few adult beverages, and we're throwing on a horror movie, you know. I mean, that's... I don't really do a whole lot of the, you know, Facebook watch parties. It's a cool idea. I'm not shitting on it in any way.
Right.
You know, it's a cool idea to get members involved and whatnot. But at any rate, and hey, of course, last but not least, you can also find Malice and myself, Night of the Living Dreads, over there on Facebook, nightofthelivingdreads.com. If you happen to like what you're hearing for some strange reason and want to go back and listen to more, that's where you can do it at. So, with that, you already heard, you know, everybody already heard the intro in the beginning of, you know, what we're going to be discussing. Okay. Although we didn't give the name of this week's SMF.
No.
But we did mention that we are going to talk some about the one Charles Manson. And, you know, it's a slippery slope there, but I'm not going to get too much into it because you know what time it is? It's time for this week's SMF.
Oh, you sick motherfucker!
Malice, who is this week's SMF?
It would be Nancy Doss.
A girl?
I read that wrong. I'm sorry. Nanny Doss.
Nanny Doss. Nancy.
Yeah, she was also known as the Giggling Granny, Lonely Hearts Killer, the Black Widow, and Lady Bluebeard.
It's weird because she did not have a female freak circus beard.
No, she did not.
She didn't. But she was kind of off in the head a little bit. Why don't you tell us a little bit about this Giggling Granny?
Well, she was born in 1905, and she was an American serial killer that she did a lot of damage to her entire family.
Oh, my.
She killed 4 husbands, 2 sisters, a grandchild, a mother-in-law, and her own mother.
Now, you know, I'm just really curious just on that little bit because, you know, what you've already said is, you know, pretty heinous because this woman was, you know, approximately how old when she started all this? I mean, this kind of went back to, I think it said, what, like the 1920s is when it started to about 1954. Am I close on that?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, and there was approximately 11 murders. So she was born what year? I'm just curious on how old she was exactly when the murder started or is said.
She was born in 1905.
Okay, so she was 15 years old.
Yes.
15 years old and you know, already just off and running. The Giggling Granny.
Well, as a child, you know, she was pretty much used as a farmhand.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Her father, you know, he wouldn't send them to school, her or her siblings. They, you know, they had to work on
so
the
very,
farm.
Very much not educated or even educated in the world, as it seems. You know, they don't have those, you know, experiences, you know, going to, you know, a market or something.
Or any kind of life experience.
Any kind
all.
Of life just, experience, right. Other than the farm.
Wake up, go to work,
right.
Go to bed.
Yeah.
And, you know, they weren't even allowed to do girlish things. They weren't allowed to, you know, dress up. Wear, you know, any kind of any dresses or makeup. You know, their father was concerned about their safety with.
Well, sure, because their mascara may run in their eyes in the summer when they're plowing the fields. And they make all crooked rows. And all right, that was a bad attempt at some humor. But yeah, so she grew up, you know, it wasn't an easy by any means, you know, childhood. What was there any kind of physical or mental abuse that maybe threw her over the edge? There was some. There was an incident on a train. Why don't you tell us that story?
Well, before the train, I mean, it was speculated that they had possibly been molested. It didn't,
oh, okay.
Didn't say who, but it was just a possibility.
Okay.
Not to mention that, you know, their father was a stern and, you know,
right,
evil man. Mm-hmm. The way the information that I read,
right,
that her,
the way he fathered them, you know, so could it be speculated maybe that he could have been the molestor?
I mean, he might have been.
Right.
But it said that, you know, her and her mother didn't like him because he was mean.
Right.
So I can only assume
it's a mean disposition, not a nice person to be
that
around.
He probably disciplined him pretty badly.
Right. Right.
But like you said, when she was seven, you know, she got to leave the farm. They were going on a trip on a train, and, you know, there was an accident where the train had to stop suddenly, and she hit her head. And apparently she suffered from blackouts.
Right.
And
did it say that she had seizures? Was that one of them? I don't know, but yeah, I do remember hearing the blackouts part. And then, of course, you know, which I understand, you know, the science behind some serious head trauma like that, and it kind of causing your wiring to go a little haywire.
I don't know about that. It doesn't say anything about seizures, but it said severe headaches,
and
and suffered from depression.
Right. So, you know, you hear a lot, and I did hear it speculated that, oh, what, you know, the question arose, was it this head injury when she was seven, you said?
Yes.
That caused her head to just get, you know, scrambled just enough, okay, which can happen. I'm not denying that. Or was she just kind of, you know, just born and bred evil? And most people sided with the born and bred evil type deal. They said it was just her. You know, they didn't really, you know, see a connection, even though, you know, back then, of course, didn't have the MRIs and, you know, things like that, the technology we have now and the science that, you know, we have now. But none of them, you know, they all figured, no, this woman was, you know, she just flat out a nutter.
Pretty much.
Go ahead. What else we got on this?
So it says that, you know, her father arranged a marriage for her when she was 16.
Mm-hmm.
And it was to Charlie Braggs. It was a coworker of hers at a linen factory that she had, you know, taken a place of employment at.
Right.
And, you know, Braggs was the only child of a single mother, and he had lived with her. So he's living with his mom and has this, you know, 16-year-old wife.
Like, the future looks bright.
And so, you know, they, you know, they're together for a while, and they ended up having, you know, a few kids. And one day,
a couple daughters, was it? Was it like two?
I think
two
it was
daughters. Was that Melvina? That's Melvina's father?
Yes.
Which I'm sure we'll get into a little bit, but that was Giggling Granny's oldest daughter, Melvina, I believe her name is.
Well, they had four daughters.
Oh, four. That's right. You're right. You're right.
So, you know, Braggs come home. He comes home one day to the two middle girls. They're dead.
Wow.
And she's just claiming that there was some kind of accidental poisoning.
Accidental poisoning. How does that fucking happen?
I have no clue.
You're feeding a bad meat or poisoning? I mean,
yeah, I'm interested in, like, what kind of poisoning,
yeah,
you know, she tried to.
Well, in a lot of her, you know, future dead husbands, arsenic was her go-to.
Arsenic, yeah, rat poison.
Yeah, rat poisoning, yeah. But yeah, so what did old Charlie Bags do?
He takes the firstborn, Melvina, and leaves the youngest, Florine, with Laughing Granny.
Laughing Granny.
And he just takes off and leaves.
I don't know what I would do in that particular situation.
He's
but,
like, well, I've known you longer. I care about you more. You'll be easier to take care of. You can take care of yourself.
Yeah. Wow.
I feel bad for that baby.
Oh, man. Poor Florine.
So, I mean, but he leaves her there with his mother.
Mom didn't even stand a chance at that point. Well, I'm getting the firstborn daughter, and I'm hauling ass out of here, and that's pretty much what he did. Melvina was, you know, the oldest of the daughters, I believe, right? She was the firstborn. Melvina, yeah.
Melvina, yes.
Yeah. She was, you know, the oldest, so the firstborn, Charlie's like, boop, I'm grabbing her, out the door he went.
Yeah, he did.
Gone, man. Bye, Mom. Have fun with that crazy bitch.
Yeah, and she ended up dying.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Who saw that fucking coming? Because that's just how old giggling granny, operates, the old black widow. It's how she operates, man. And she, obviously, when we get into some of her husbands that... till death do you part. Oh, God, if you only knew. get into maybe some of them we already mentioned. What, Charlie? He was the first husband?
Yes.
And, okay, let's the second husband, because there's four that she, I think, confessed to killing. But I also heard there were five husbands. Maybe we can clarify this. Who's husband number two on the... firing line.
I don't think she killed.
She Braggs. Didn't kill the second one? She didn't kill Braggs?
No.
Slacker.
No, she married had, you know, multiple husbands that she didn't kill.
Well, I've just lost all respect for her. But her deaths did include four husbands.
Right.
That she even confessed to, so.
I'm lost in my notes here. He's lost. My Wikipedia notes.
He's lost in his notes.
See, that's the bad thing about some of these serial killers, man, that some of the information's so scarce.
It is.
And it's repetitive. Everything you watch is just verbatim.
Yeah, it really is. You know, on that note, I'd like to say that I think we've had some good ones here on this new little thing we're doing, the SMF. Bringing to light maybe some newer ones. While you're going through that, this is what they say about her confession. It says that Nanny confessed to killing four of her husbands, her mother, her sister Dovey, her grandson, Robert, and her mother-in-law, Arlie Lanning's mother. The state of Oklahoma centered its case only on Samuel Doss. The prosecution found her mentally fit for trial, and Nanny pleaded guilty on May 17, 1955, and was sentenced to life imprisonment. The state did not pursue the death penalty due to her gender. They did not want to be the first one to execute a woman. So as it goes on, Doss was never charged with the other deaths. She died of leukemia in the hospital ward of the Oklahoma State Penitentiary in 1965. So that's just a little overview there of what she confessed to doing. But the other, it mentions the, you know, not charged with the other deaths. What other deaths are we? Okay, we got her grandson, her mother-in-law.
I'm thinking maybe the baby that, you know, where they seen
where
that
it said that the hairpin or whatever
stuck
it was.
Stuck the needle in the baby's
yeah,
head.
Yeah, stuck a pin in, you know, a baby's head or whatnot. So, okay. Even has her mother, four of her husbands, her sister. So, I don't know, my friend. Anything you want to add to this crazy grandma? And you look at her.
And
she looks like, you know, she kind of reminds me of like that Ted Bundy type serial killer where you look at Ted Bundy's, you know, there's good looking guy, and you know, he's very good with the ladies. He doesn't look like a serial killer. And either does old granny. And then sometimes she does. Just depends on the camera angle, I guess. What were you gonna say?
I was wrong. It was her second marriage is where she began to kill her husband.
Oh, okay.
And it was
okay.
Robert Franklin Harrelson. And she killed him by poisoning his corn whiskey.
That's right.
She had found it in the garden and dumped a little bit out and put the rat poison in it. And
if I'm not mistaken, the reason that she did all that was the night before he was out celebrating. I don't know if it was
promotion? Japan surrendered.
Celebration, the end of the war type deal. And he was celebrating with some friends he had overseas. Came home drunk. He was a little bit demanding. I want to get the booty.
The nookie.
The nookie. It's all about the nookie at that point when you're drunk off of corn liquor all night and you got to get you some poontang. So, hey, old granny wasn't having that. Granny wasn't having that shit.
No, she was not.
Well, yeah. And then she proceeded to do this after, you know, he passed out. Poured a little bit out, poured a little bit of rat poisoning in that bad boy. And when he came home the next day, he had the drink of his lifetime. Because it was the last one he's ever going to have. The hell with 12-step.
And then she met Arlie Lanning.
Right.
While traveling Lexington, North Carolina.
Now, and it was his mother that she killed. It states that her grandson, Robert, and her mother-in-law, Arlie Lanning's mother. She was ruthless, man.
Oh, definitely.
She was absolutely ruthless. Didn't care. I mean, killing her own grandkid.
Killing her own grandkid, her own mother, her own sisters.
Damn. I don't even know what to say to that because she looks just like a grandmother.
I mean, it's crazy to be that money hungry.
A lot of it, we haven't mentioned that, or did we? A lot of this, her grandson, there was a life insurance policy, which she collected.
Right.
After her grandson died, after she murdered him, okay, there was also other murders, especially with her husbands. Her ex-husbands all had, you know, significant life insurance policies. At one point, she cashed in on one of her husband's policy and I think bought like 10 acres of land. And, you know, I'm sure that was probably a lot to purchase at one time at that time, you know. But yeah, so I mean, a lot of greed there, a lot of greed, a lot of money. But damn, I mean, that greed has reached a new level when you take your own grandkid out.
Yeah, I can't even imagine
that's just I mean, phew. What can we add? How can we finish this week's SMF off, which again was Nanny Doss.
Nanny Doss.
Nanny Doss.
Lady Bluebeard.
Lady Bluebeard, a.k.a. the Black Widow.
Giggling Granny.
And Giggling Nanny. Now, I think that was another one as well. She had a couple different versions of that. I've seen different versions of it. Giggling Nanny, Giggling Granny. Anyway, Psycho Grandma.
Oh, for Roseanne Barr.
She does. There are some still photos, I'm not even going to lie. She's a little bit like Roseanne Barr. I was actually, you know, starting a new conspiracy theory earlier. I think Roseanne Barr is somehow related to the Giggling Granny. Anyway, on that note, all right, we're going to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about some Charles Manson. I'm going to get a little rant off my chest because I'm sick and tired of people saying he's a murderer. I'm sick and tired of people saying that, you know, he's a serial killer or puts them in that that rank of serial. No, okay. through my rants, we're going to try and clear some of that up. So, while we wait for all those lovely rants, on the other side of the break, we have a few ditties by one Mr. Charles Manson. A lot of people didn't know he, you know, songwriter. He was an aspiring musician. Never made it big time. Kind of wish he would have.
Yeah, there are a couple of my favorites.
I have a few favorites myself, Malice, my friend. And you're going to hear a couple of these little ditties here during this break. Until we meet again on the other side, I'm Otis B. Dreads.
I'm Malice Murphy.
And we will see you on the other side. Enjoy.
I didn't tie anybody up.
Okay.
I was never on a scene where anyone was killed. I think the law says you can only keep me 17 years or 18 years if I was never on the scene where anyone was killed. I was never on the crime scene of anything.
Have you never felt remorse for the crimes you committed?
What crimes? I told you I haven't committed any crimes.
This confusion belongs to you. It's your confusion. I don't have any confusion. I don't have any guilt. I know what I've done, and no man can judge me.
Someone comes to me and says, we're going to kill so-and-so. I'll tell them, what do you think about that?
No, I don't think about it. I'm not mad at him. I don't even know it. They say, well, we're going to get him. I said, well, what do you want me to do? They say, you want to come with us and help us? I said, nope. I'm not breaking no laws this time.
I didn't kill nobody. I didn't tell nobody to get killed. Okay. I didn't get no trial.
Okay, you
know? Mr. Yeah, we don't want to hear
that's
from
it.
That. See?
I don't know.
We don't want to mix anything Thank up you. With the truth. Does anyone have any remorse that I've spent 23 years in a solitary cell? And even on Devil's Island, you didn't keep anyone over 5 years. There's another letter in there that you didn't read about how Manson was burned up and how people threw fire on him and they should have killed him. They didn't tell you that. They tried to kill me at least 30 or 40 times, that they haven't been able to kill me because I'm right with my God and I'm right with myself and I didn't break the law.
I told the judge, can't you see what you're doing here? He didn't care. Nobody cared.
When he was finally given the right to testify in court, Prosecutor Vincent Bugliosi argued that Manson's hypnotic powers might be too persuasive to the jury. Thus, they were banned from hearing his testimony on the grounds that they might be convinced of Manson's innocence.
I'm still right there saying, all right, man, you know, like, if that's what you want to do, but you're only destroying yourselves, man.
I don't preach it, but I know it. It's a reality. It's a reality. Jesus Christ is a reality.
And all you comedians who get up there and tell jokes about Charlie Manson, what would you do if I was in the same room with you? I know more about the economy, more about money, more about the government than any 10 presidents you got. You know, in other words, I've sat in solitary confinement and I watched everything you guys do. And the truth is, you're all lying to yourselves.
I have empathy for your children. I have understanding for your children and compassion for your children. And I love those kids with my heart and my soul. And I seen the struggle that they were struggling through, being thrown out of their houses, no place to go. Daddy's a rocket scientist. Mama's always drunk. So did I put the kids in the garbage can? Your society put your kids in the garbage can. I picked them out of the garbage can and said, all you got to do, tell the truth and be honest.
I go in the vision room and all the kids run over, so they won't let me in the vision room because all the kids come over to play, man. And he'd get up in my lap, and a little five-year-old would get up in my lap, and he'll say, I'm Charlie Manson. Give me your money. He takes their money away from him, and he laughs. He's only five. But that would make me a bad guy because you would say I was influencing him. But how about him? Is he influencing me?
You come and draw a line, you say, you can't get out of there. And I say, out of where? He said, you're locked up. I said, locked up in what? He said, well, you're locked up and we're free. And I said, oh, yeah. And then you walk back and forth and you play important with my life as if you got something that I want.
They got some big old fat women that paint their faces and shit and dye their hair. And they cut the legs off the table so little girls can't get over and play with the little guys. And they got all kinds of little sex paranoias and little deceiving, little lying, cheating little things that they play. And then they'll push them off on somebody else and say it's all their fault, that they're no good, and we got the bad guys locked up over here, and we're all the good guys.
So the public can feel safe against this monster, and we're going to charge you $200 million to build another set of penitentiaries.
Why don't you tell the public what's really going on? Why don't you tell them the water's so bad the fish can't live in it? Why don't you tell them that the polar caps are melting because you're creating so much heat with this machine? You see what I'm saying? Why don't you tell them the truth? That we were going to blow the world up in the 60s, but a handful of kids jumped up and said, no, give the other children a chance. And they saved it from being blown up.
You've medicated me, you've burnt me, you've beat me, you've stabbed me, you've done everything you can do to me, and I'm still here, and you're still going to have to face the truth about this case sooner or later.
Hey, how you doing? You still in there? Is anybody there? They'll run out and demonstrate for a nuclear power plant and go home and turn electricity on. If you want to demonstrate for a nuclear power plant, don't use electricity. Does it make sense? You know what I'm saying? They want to demonstrate for something on one hand and get their faces up in the camera and like, look at me, I'm different, you know, or pay me to be somebody, you dig? And then on the other hand, they can't be somebody because they go home and turn the fucking electricity on and use the same fucking pollution. You dig what I'm saying? In other words, you can't protest cutting down trees with paperwork.
All the people that want to live, stop cutting down trees and stop polluting the ground.
There's shopping malls where the lake used to be, using up all the water. And the creeks over there where the freeway is, and you can't swim there anymore. There's no more fish there, and civilization has moved out, and it's choking all the life off the earth.
The truth is, simply, the planet Earth is dying.
Every time I go to these committees, I'll wait 2 or 3 years for you. And I'll sit in a cell and stare at the wall for 2 or 3 years, just wait for you people. And then when you get here, you can't even give me 5 minutes. Each one of you is somebody. I am nobody. I'm nothing. I'm now. I've been now all my life. My mother went to prison and left me. And everybody's lied to me. My principal is not locked up in a bank, and my soul is not locked up in a government, and my life is not locked up in a penitentiary. You got my body in a cell, but that's only a day, you know, that don't count for no eternity. I'm walking in forever, man.
People say I'm no good, but they never do they say why their world is so mixed up or how it got that way. They all look at me and they frown. Do I really look so strange? If they really dug themselves, I know they'd want to change. Everybody says you're no good, 'cause you don't do like they think you should. Do you expect them? And do you expect you to act like them? Look at them, man, look at the fix they're in. I don't care, I don't care what they say. Just let them sit there and burn. The young might not be so dumb after all, and from the young you might even learn. Everybody says you're no good, 'cause you don't do like they think you should. Do you expect them to act like you? Do you expect them to expect you to act like them? Do you expect to see, do you expect the fool to see what a fix he's in? Do you expect the fool? What a fix is in. With your cardboard houses and your tin can cars, you sit there and you wonder. You wonder where you are. Those diamond rings, they're all the same. You sit there and you wonder. And you say, who's to blame? Take a look at yourself. Take yourself off the shelf. Can't belong to nobody. With y'all can't cough medicine and y'all want a drug. You got more sickness than you got cures of. The big iron door. They put me in a cell with a concrete floor. Nine other men in that cell with me, moaning their fate with destiny. Clang, bang, clang. Clang, bang, clang, clang. Early in the morning at the crack of dawn, they wake us to the tune of a bong, bong, bong. Line up for chow, mushing hard bread, drinking black coffee with that noise in my head. Clang, 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 clang. The judge said to me, now, boy, you had it.
Charles Miles Manson. That is who we are talking about this half of the show. Welcome back, Night of the Living Dreads podcast. I am Otis B. Dreads.
I am Malice Murphy.
And once again, Charles Manson is who we're going to talk about. Now, we're going to talk about how I'm going to muzzle that dog here in about 2 seconds. But there's a lot of different... I guess I'm one that you could say is a Manson sympathizer, I guess you could say. And I know that sounds bad. It's like, how could you sympathize with, you know, Charles Manson? How could you do that? You know, but maybe it's not so much a sympathy. I'm a fan of the guy. Is that wrong?
No, I don't think so.
No, I mean, to be a fan of a, you know, almost did it. Not a serial killer, but, you know, somebody who's as infamous as he is, you know. He's famous, you know, worldwide. Everybody knows that name. But my deal is, let me just start out and read you guys just a little bit on his like the first paragraph on his Wikipedia page. It says he was born November 12, 1934, and he, you know, died November 19th, 2017. He was an American criminal, cult leader, and musician. That to me was funny. I don't know why. In mid-1967, he began forming what became known as the Manson Family, a quasi-commune based in California. Manson's followers committed a series of 9 murders at 4 locations in July and August in 1969. In 1971, he was convicted of first-degree murder and conspiracy to commit murder for the deaths of 7 people, all of which members of the group carried out at his instruction. Manson was also convicted of first-degree murder for 2 other deaths. Who? And, you know, again, I'm like, you know, almost like obsessed with this guy and his story, man. So, you know, over the years, I've looked a lot at, who are these other 2 deaths?
Well, I'm just fixated on it. It says you know, Manson's followers committed a series of nine murders. It didn't say Manson and his followers.
Exactly. Exactly. Which brings me up, you know, this whole first degree murder that he was charged with. And people are going to be like, are you really defending, you know, the charges of Charles Manson? Yes, I fucking am. Okay. I guess I am. Okay, you can take it however you want. I'm just kind of trying to use a little bit of logic where most people, you know, exclude logic. When you come across somebody that's been portrayed, you know, you're so evil and blah, blah, blah. And yes, there are a lot of evil serial killers out there. Malice and I have talked about quite a few. This is not a serial killer. Okay, he was a petty car thief, you know. But first degree murder. And as we mentioned during that break, you know, you would think if you're going to bring up, if you're a prosecuting attorney or you're the state, okay, and you're bringing charges against this person, state's prosecutor, whatever, you would think that you would have to have a pretty good foundation of evidence. No holes in it, you know, have some evidence to show why you are bringing these, you know, charges, that being first degree murder, on a person.
Right.
Does that seem fair?
Yes.
You know, I mean, because you just don't bring that up against anybody, you know, with no proof. But it's to my knowledge that they have never been able to link any physical evidence to Charles Manson at any of the murder scenes. So I guess my question is, how, and this is probably one of the first points, you know, bits of logic about this that I came across when I first started really looking into them. How do you then charge a person, lock him in a cage, without a shred of evidence connecting him other than hearsay? Because I think that's all we got when they say, oh, well, he ordered me to, you know, do this. And yes, movies will, you know, portray it a certain way for, you know, shock value and to, you know, boost, you know, Bugliosi's, you know, fucking book sales. Okay. Because he's a crook, folks. I mean, I don't know if you know a whole lot about him. I don't know about his past, but I know what he did in this, you know, particular case. It just seems odd to me that you could just go ahead and pin it, boom. I mean, he was locked up and the sheriff's fucking released him, you know, at one point. What's your thought on, speaking of, you know, Bugliosi, this is a fucking boob. Of his whole helter skelter thing, that being, you know, the race war theory
I've also heard if you play Stairway to Heaven backwards, that the gates of hell will open and you will meet the devil.
No, nobody listened to the Beatles, the White Album. And, yeah. I mean, he pointed out, we watched a little interview, he pointed out all kinds of different songs on that. I mean, what's your thoughts on that theory?
That's ridiculous, man.
It seems ridiculous.
He goes, well, what implicates him in that song? Well, nothing particularly.
In that song.
But he says Black Bird, and they have this song, Black Bird, and he says Black Bird is for Black Panther.
Right, and it's the black people rising up, and that's how he said it. That's all that they really had to go on. And, you know, from what I've looked into it, man, that's all they could, because they couldn't pinpoint him at the murder. So they had to implement him somehow in these crimes. So what do? They get him under the California conspiracy law at the time, which is, and you know what? Even being a fan, he got his artwork for Father's Day one year. I mean, if that tells you anything. I actually can understand the conspiracy to commit. I don't know if there's a strong enough foundation on from what I heard, because all you really have, I mean, unless some of these ex-family members are, you know, fucking squealing or you know, or are they doing it for TV ratings because, you know, Nightline is, you know, doing a special on the Manson family survivors or some shit. You know what I mean?
Well, in that documentary that I was watching, right. The Lost Tapes, it had interviews of some of the members of the family.
Right. Yeah, you were telling me about this. This is
crazy. And it stated, or it captioned, that, you know, this was soon after they had left the family or cult, you know, right. is what they tried to, you know, stamp it with to give it that bad image. But they have them sitting there with fucking rifles and shit. Why are they
props? I mean, were they supposed to be like just props? Like, what, we're badasses? Or
I guess it was like to show that, you know,
they were scared of
that they were how they were. Not, I'm not gonna. I can't. I don't want to say trained, but how they got familiarized with weapons within the group that they were in.
And, you know, that's actually a good segue in how we can talk about how they did get to that point and why it was speculated that it was, you know, Charlie's big, you know, plan. We got to take over Blackie before Blackie takes over Whitey and, you know, all that nonsense. There was a little drug deal, I think, made by Mr. Tex Watson. That went kind of wrong, and it went wrong in the way that Tex was actually trying to, you know, rip this black guy off, okay, for like $2,000 or some shit.
Mm-hmm.
It was a nice chunk of money back, you know, in your mid to late 60s. And that didn't work out too well, and you know, he ended up getting hemmed up with this I cannot remember his name, this drug dealer. Tex did, and, you know, Tex calls Manson. Well, Manson comes over and blah blah blah, and there were some words and some altercation, and it is stated that the black guy pulled out a gun because it got so heated. He pulled out a gun. He was just going to kill him. And at that moment, Charlie pulls out his revolver and shoots him. Does not kill him, but he shoots him. Now, the next day in the papers, and again, I don't even know if this is completely true or not. Next day in the papers, it's stating that the person shot was a, you know, a high leader in the Black Panther movement. Now, again, let's backtrack a little bit, because after all this happened, old Charlie was said to not be very happy with Tex getting him involved in something like that. You know, it wasn't part of his MO, I guess you could say, when it came to the family, but things were happening now. That got old Charlie, got him a little paranoid. He's starting to think that, oh man, you know, well, they already got, you know, there's these small communities, these ghettos or whatever, and they're packing in and stockpiling all these guns. They're militants. He even stated that, you know, he was in prison, you know, with a couple, you know, militant, you know, black, I don't know, I'm assuming they were Black Panthers. And he said, man, they're just, you know, dangerous, or they're scary. You know, I mean, you just don't fuck with them. And so, of course, he's hearing he just shot, quote unquote, leader or a high leader, okay, in the Black Panther Party movement. And,
well, the newspaper stated that he was dead.
Newspapers did. I'm glad you brought that up. They did state he was dead, and even though the guy was released like a day or so later. I mean, yeah, the guy didn't die. But it was out there that, you're absolutely right. See, Malice is on his game tonight. He doesn't think he is, man, but he is. No, so that just adds another little monkey wrench into it. Why is the media coming out in the newspapers, you know, rolling headlines that, you know, leader in Black Panther Party, you know, is shot dead, you know, and now Manson again is frantic, you know, as no
yeah, he
idea.
Thinks they're going to retaliate.
Exactly. He thinks they're going to retaliate. So I think that's about the time that they went out to Death Valley, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Goes out there in Death Valley. Well, go ahead, man.
Oh, no, you go ahead.
Jump in.
You know more than I do. But, I mean, he goes out to that was that ranch?
There was another ranch that he bought, yeah, out there. I can't remember the name of it, but, I mean, Death Valley just doesn't sound like a fantastic vacation resort, you know, just to go hang out with your bros and sisses, you
is
know?
It where he traded an album that he got from...
Oh, yeah. What was it? A Beatles gold album?
Not a
Beach Boys.
Beach Boys
that he got
album.
From Dennis Wilson.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how he got that little bit of land. That's... High, you know, I mean, yeah, it was. They said it was all fun and games, you know, that first, you know, day or so, you know, just out exploring. It's new grounds, you know, and all of a sudden that fucking heat starts getting to you, you know. And, you know, they didn't have the resources that, you know, were needed. I think a couple women, a couple of the girls fucking hauled ass to the nearest town. And told a sheriff that, you know, Charlie was, you know, I don't know if he was going to, you know, kill more people, but he was scaring them and he was, you know, he was going crazy, basically. And I think that's kind of what drew some attention to him at that point. Again, you know, there's the speculation that Bianca murders, which happened after the Tates. There was, I can't leave this out. There was the Hinman murder by, which was actually the murderer in this was actually Bobby Busey. I can't remember how to pronounce his last name, but we'll just call him Bobby. Not the Bobby that has frequented the 9/11 Treads, mind you. Guy Bobby had a little, you know, altercation. Oh, what it was, I think, was they were getting some mescaline. Isn't that what it was? They were getting some mescaline. It wasn't up to par as far as potency and whatnot. So, you know, he goes to, you know, confront this guy and altercation breaks out, and, you know, there's guns waving around, people being threatened, and blah, blah, blah. So Bobby decides, yeah, I'm going to call up Charlie. So Charlie comes over, and, you know, Hinman, I can't remember his first name, but Hinman, he takes and he thinks everything's going to be okay. He thinks Charlie's going to come in. He's going to kind of quiet everything down. They're going to be able to talk because Charlie was actually that kind of guy. You know, he was very angry at the, you know, outburst and the gunplay with Tex, and told him after that, hey, you owe me one, motherfucker. You know, basically, you owe me one. So Charlie comes in and, you know, is pretty much telling him, look, man, you owe a debt, pay your fucking debt. He don't do it. Charlie loses his temper, breaks out what they say is a small sword, and cuts old dude's ear, or side of his face, right around his ear, and then leaves. Later on, after like a day and a half, I think, of what they call like a standoff, you know, which is basically this guy, you know, bleeding. And they said the girls took care of him, you know, some of the members of the family took care of him, fed him and blah, blah, blah. And so
he begins to come hysterical.
Hysterical. Because I guess the realization of what's going on here, you know, kicks out. Oh, I got to get the fuck out of here now, you know, becomes hysterical. What happens next?
That's when...
It's old Bobby.
Was it Bobby?
I think so. I think Bobby was the one who ran and you know, to quiet him up, jumped on top of him.
Stabbed him.
Stabbed him multiple times. And killed him.
Right.
So this presents a, you know, a little bit of a problem for the, you know, family. Because now we have, because he was picked up, he stole the dude's car. Okay, stole Hinman's car and was later pulled over in this stolen vehicle. And that's how they, you know, he became a suspect for this murder and then later convicted of it. Well, this is going to look bad now. Because they're going to trace this back to, you know, this is what Manson's thinking. This is going to trace back to, you know, the family. I'm going to go back to prison. I can't have this. So three of the girls, I wish I had wrote their name down earlier. I believe it was Sadie was involved. Again, this is for entertainment purposes only. If you're trying to take notes about Charles Manson from this podcast, you've been misled. Anyway, three girls approach Manson. They come up with this plan. I know how we can maybe take the eyes off of the family. You know what I mean? So they bring this master plan, which was to create a copycat murder. To show that, hey, that you got the wrong guy, man. You pinned the wrong guy. You got to let him go because this is still happening. Same type of, you know, murders, blah, blah, blah. You got the wrong guy. So that was, you know, to get the heat off the family. Well, that's when the Tates come in. Well, no, I think even before that, it was... Melcher, and that is his name, Melcher. He was a record producer out there, and Manson. No, was it that one? I'm all confused now. I can't remember if it was that one or if it was Tate.
It was the last one. It was
the Biancas. The Biancas? On the fly research, ladies and gentlemen. This is how unprofessional we are.
I don't know where I'm at.
The power of editing. At any rate, I mean, again, he can't be tagged at any of these murder scenes. Other than word of mouth, other than talking to the people. So me sitting here talking to you, Malice, we're sitting here, and I'm telling you about, you know, this family that did my family wrong, or you know, whatever the reasons are. It doesn't matter. What matters is, it matters to me so much that I want them dead. Okay?
Right.
And I'm just saying, I'm talking to you about this and blah, 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 and how it can happen and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, maybe you say something like, oh, well, yeah, that wouldn't be hard. Well, do what you got to do. And you even do that shit. Now it's a conspiracy. I didn't tell you to go do it. You know what I mean? And even if I did, do you not have the mental fortitude to be like, well, no, it's kind of wrong.
Right.
To go and slaughter households of people. Which is strange to me. That's the one thing that baffles me about this, you know. A lot of people say, oh, he brainwashed them all and blew with all of his drugs and whatever, you know. We don't know. We can speculate because, as you mentioned, that word cult leader, you know, is thrown out there. And when we think of cult leader, we think of, you know, Jim Jones and David Koresh and, you know, people who just had people apparently under their spell and could just, you know, have them do whatever they wanted them to do.
I got a cult for you. Every fucking parent in the world, you know, you raise your child and you tell them to do what you want them to do. And if they don't do what you want them to do, you probably bust their ass or put them in timeout. What was Charles Manson beating these people like if they didn't listen to him?
Right.
You know?
The sex was willing.
Even with getting whipped by, you know, my mom, when she told me to go to bed, I still didn't go to bed. You know, you're not the boss of me.
You're not the boss of me. You don't know me. You don't know my struggle.
I'm just, you have the power to, you have free will.
And that I swear that's the one thing that always kind of just wigged me out, man. It's like, I just can't really figure that one out. I mean, because none of us really know how strong of an influence these people, you know, or that Manson had on these people, you know. We can watch interviews all we want, but again, Is there some show going on there? You know, are we playing it up a little bit because we're on national TV? It's Nightline. It's 2020. You know, whatever. Hard copy.
It has to be just the time era, you know, when it happened. Because
there was a lot of drugs.
Because we live in an era where, you know, people can, you know, decide their own gender now. But you're telling me that you can't not, you know, go murder someone if someone tells you to go do that?
Right. Exactly.
That's absurd.
And I swear it even seems like that even back then. But, you know, when you had the flood of hallucinogenics at the time, which they don't want to get into, you know, government or politics, but I think we all know the CIA had a hand in the hallucinogenics during, you know, MK Ultra and things like that. It's
they
documented.
Had their hand in every drug, you know, pharmaceutical street that's ever made it.
But the reason they used, you know, hallucinogenics is because it made the person very susceptible to what you were saying. So in that regard, I can understand to a point how these people could be so receptive and hang on every little word Manson said and sometimes take it a little too far, maybe, you know, overinterpret it, you know. I can see where that can happen because acid, you know, can make you, you know, lose a whole lot of inhibition. And maybe, you know, you're not thinking critical. You're seeing a altered, you know, version of reality at that point. So, and there was a lot of that going on. Now, of course, there was a lot of weed and there was a lot of sex and blah, blah, blah. So there was a lot of trust in that little community that they had. So that alone can be a contributing factor, I think, as to, you know, how much they received Manson.
Well, they need to be held accountable for taking
acid. I agree. I agree.
Like, it's
exactly.
It's not his fault. That's the
other, you know.
That it made you lose your inhibitions.
We haven't heard stories yet of being tied up to, you know, a post at Spawn Ranch and force-fed acid. I haven't come across that one yet. But if you do, just drop it in the...
if they're still doing that, let us know. And
right.
We'll be on a plane.
How much are the tickets? You know, so again, going back to, you know, what you were kind of, you know, alluding to earlier, you know, these family members, they weren't forced to be there. You can leave. You came in on your own free will. What about that hitchhiker in the desert? You know, tell me a little bit about that.
Oh, that he was just...
Or he's just like exploring or whatever, just hiking or whatnot, right?
I don't know if he was so much exploring. I think he was just... You know, like a drifter.
A drifter,
and,
okay.
You know, come upon this shack, you know, just out, you know, in the middle of the desert. And He knocked on the door, and his words, he goes, you know, three beautiful women answered the door and told me to come in. And Charlie was sitting on the floor surrounded by five or six more other girls and sitting there playing the guitar. And, you know, I could smell marijuana. And, you know, so I did what, you know, what was I supposed to do, you know?
Yeah, what did we say? You know, I'm going to need some help.
Yeah, he said, he goes, and Charlie asked me to stay because he goes, I'm going to need some help pleasing all these women, man. And he goes, I can't keep them satisfied all by myself. He goes,
that's a lot of women.
You got to help me, man.
What would you do? What would you do? And what a perfect story to kind of end this here. Episode 22, Night of Living Dreads. Been talking Charlie Manson this week's SMF, the giggling granny, old Nanny Doss. Not your typical mum-mum by any means. So, all right. Hey, and don't forget to check out Gorehounds of Horror over there on Facebook, as well as our little share for share partner. After Dark over there on Facebook. And of course, hey, we're over there, Malice, Night Living Dreads. That's Dreads with no A. I know I haven't said that in a minute, but that it is no A in that, as well as nightlivingdreads.com. Again, no A. So, hey, until next week, I am Otis B. Dreads.
I'm Malice Murphy.
And we'll see. We'll talk to you next week. Later.
Things no one knows. We're going to die.